This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Ben says it'll be okay.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke just gave us his take on the U.S. economy. Bernanke was beamed via satellite from a conference in Spain. He said he believes the economy will pick up later this year. But the housing market is still the wild card.
Until the housing market, and particularly house prices, show clearer signs of stabilization, growth risks will remain to the downside. Recent increases in oil prices pose additional downside risks to growth.
As for interest rates, you can probably forget about any more rate cuts for a while. Bernanke sounded most concerned about inflation, food and oil prices, and the dollar.
Over time, the Federal Reserve's commitment to both price stability and maximum sustainable employment and the underlying strengths of the U.S. economy will be key factors ensuring that the dollar remains a strong and stable currency.
I don't think Bernanke said anything Wall Street didn't already know. Plus, there's more sour news from banks and home builders this morning. Toll Brothers had a loss last quarter. Lehman Brothers will have one, its first in 14 years. Stephen Beard reports.
Lehman's results are not due out until the week after next, but analysts have already figured out the numbers, and they're not pretty. It's thought the bank could lose well over $300 million and need a fresh capital injection of $4 billion. Mortgages are the main problem, and Lehman's not alone. Among other international banks, there's been a flurry of profit warnings and other problems lately. That's a setback for the more upbeat mood of recent weeks. Jeff Goldfarb is with the financial website Breaking Views.
We've seen some optimism of late from bank CEOs saying that the worst may be behind us, but this latest bout of news really seems to indicate that the bottom may not yet be in sight.
He says as the credit crunch hits the real economy, that's feeding back into the source of the problem, the banks. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
So, not too many gains on Wall Street so far. The Dow is actually down 17 points to 12,486. The NASDAQ has gained 7. The S&P 500 is flat from its close yesterday of 1386. In Asia, the markets closed about 1.5% lower. A bit of a mix in Europe so far. And oil prices have dropped to about 125 and change. Auto sales come out today. And my friend, they won't be pretty. Probably double-digit declines for Detroit's big three. GM just said this morning it's going to close 4 truck and SUV plants in North America. 2 of them in the U.S., in Moraine, Ohio, and Janesville, Wisconsin. The reason is obvious. People don't want to buy trucks and SUVs. More now from Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
GM CEO Rick Wagner announced the bad news before the company's annual meeting in Delaware. Wagner said GM had to act quickly in response to slumping sales of pickups and SUVs.
Consumers are absorbing the expensive gas prices and acting pretty suddenly.
GM may even discontinue its Hummer brand. About 2,500 workers at the 4 closing facilities will be affected. Some of them might be offered jobs at other GM plants. They may be making hybrids or electric cars. Wagner also announced this morning that GM is reviving its electric car, the Volt. Global Insight auto industry analyst Rachel Lindland says GM is regrouping the researchers who first made the car.
GM had experience with them back in the 90s when they had an electric car. So they actually brought a lot of those people back.
Wagner says the Volt will be in showrooms by the end of 2010. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, June 3rd on Marketplace.org. The one-year Treasury bill makes a comeback today. For the first time since 2001, the government will sell 52-week debt, $16 billion of it. From New York, Jill Barshay explains why.
Uncle Sam retired the one-year T-bill back in 2001 after a string of surpluses. But a lot's changed since then.
In the case of the year bill, they're bringing it back purely and simply because the Treasury needs the money.
That's Luke Crandall. He's the chief economist at Wrights and ICAP. He says the budget is approaching a record deficit because tax receipts are way down with the soft economy. The government needs money so badly it may bring other old-school Treasuries back from the dead.
It's conceivable that either a three-year or a seven-year note might be slipped back in.
The biggest buyers of the one-year T-bill used to be foreign central banks. But everyone from hedge funds to pensions is hungry for safe short-term debt right now. Crandall says investors don't want to tie their money up in these uncertain times. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
Whether you agree with U.S. immigration policy or not, undocumented immigrants do a lot of work in this economy. And that's the case in other countries, too, like South Africa. But in South Africa, some people are so angry about these foreigners coming in and taking their jobs, mobs attack them. Gretchen Wilson has the latest from Johannesburg.
Itai Mangwan came here from Zimbabwe 3 years ago. He opened a convenience store in a remote township. But when violence against immigrants flared up across the country, neighbors poured into his shop and stole everything, and then abducted his family.
They come and grab my wife and my child. My child is 2 years old. They go with them. I don't know where they are now.
Mangwan can't get answers from the police, and he's terrified.
I'm sleeping in the street. So here's my blanket and my pillow. You see, I don't have food to eat. I just want my family back so that I can go back to Zimbabwe.
If he goes, he'll be among the tens of thousands of migrants who've returned home to Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Malawi, and Nigeria. South Africa's economy is the biggest in the region. Still, nearly 40% of South Africans are unemployed, and some blame foreigners for taking their jobs. But the unrest is driving away the very people that the economy needs most for its growth, entrepreneurs and skilled laborers like electricians and road surveyors.
And the South African economy continues to be highly dependent on migrant labor.
Lauren Landau heads the Forced Migration Studies Program at Wits University. He says South Africa's former apartheid system left an enormous skills gap.
So I think for business to continue to grow and, of course, to create more jobs, there's a need to get those skills here.
35% of South Africa's mine workers are from other countries. At the height of the unrest, some gold mines had to shut down because their foreign workers were too afraid to show up for work. Many South Africans know this and want immigrants to stay. This is a march to demonstrate support for immigrants in the wake of the violence. Thousands of people carry signs that say things like, "Xenophobia hurts like apartheid." Apartheid made South Africa an international pariah and stunted the country's economy. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Leaders from 44 countries gathered today in Rome to talk about the world's food situation. The United Nations called this summit a few months ago to discuss the use of corn and other crops for biofuels. But in the meantime, food prices have become the big story. We're joined by reporter Megan Williams, who is in Rome. Megan, what's priority number one at this summit now?
Well, you know, the top priority is feeding people. I mean, the prices of wheat and corn and rice have nearly doubled in the past year. And, you know, that's been good news for farmers and traders and rich markets like the U.S., but it's been an absolute disaster for poorer countries.
Does the U.N. have any particular solutions it's pursuing?
Yes. What the U.N. wants right now is a $30 billion annual commitment from the richer nations. What they'd really like the funding to go towards is things like fertilizer, seeds, animal feed, to get these countries back independent and off the kind of giant food welfare system that's been set up.
Of course, there is the issue of biofuels, which was the original reason the conference was called. How much of the energy of this conference will be directed toward the U.S. policy about using corn for ethanol?
A fair part of the conference will focus on that. I mean, I think a lot of nations are pointing their fingers at the U.S. and saying, you know, your corn is going to into cars instead of feeding people, which is a kind of simplistic view of the argument in the sense that the farmers are planting corn instead of things like soya and wheat. And if other countries had produced what they normally produced for soya and wheat, it wouldn't have been a problem. But because of weather and other issues, they didn't. And that's why people have gone hungry, and that's why, you know, the prices have soared in those commodities.
And what is the UN saying about the next few months into next year in terms of food prices and crops and the whole situation?
Well, I recently spoke with Abby Abajian, who's an economist, and he said in the next few years things are really only going to get worse.
Plantings in the U.S. is about 30% behind last year because of wet weather conditions. So you could get a combination of bad yields, lower planting, much lower corn production than everyone expects today.
You know, and part of the reason, of course, is that U.S. farmers are now shifting back to soya beans because those prices have risen. So, you know, speculators are jumping in and everything's going to keep getting more expensive.
All right. Megan Williams in Rome. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Finally, the presidential primary season wraps up today. Finally. The last two states are South Dakota and Montana. The candidates raised gobs of money during this campaign, but the money race isn't working out the way Democrats had hoped. Steve Henn has this report.
Barack Obama's presidential campaign pulled in more than $250 million so far this election season. But if the senator finally emerges this week with the Democratic nomination, he and his party will be heading toward the general election, actually behind in the money race. Massey Rich is at the Center for Responsive Politics.
When you're looking at a presidential candidate's strength, I wouldn't just look at him in isolation. I would look at the financial strength of anyone who could help him out.
Obama's campaign has twice as much money left as John McCain's, and Rich says his prospects for raising more are good. But the Democratic National Committee's almost broke, and its Republican rival is sitting on more than $40 million.
The parties are not going to wait until they have a nominee officially to go on the attack against the other guy. Parties can be a lot nastier than the candidate can.
That puts Republicans in the catbird seat.
They have a short-term advantage right now.
Evan Tracy tracks political ads at the Campaign Media Analysis Group.
So I think what you'll see is the Republican Party is going to get to work trying to spend this money, really trying to define Barack Obama.
Republican online attack ads like this one, produced by the RNC, aren't running on TV yet.
Barack Obama, out of touch with American values.
But Tracy says in the next 30 days, voters in swing states should expect to hear a barrage of Obama bashing on their sets at home. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.